Hello and welcome to this latest episode from iGaming FM. This time out, we chat to James Neville, CEO of instant bank payment provider Yasper. Yasper uses open banking technology to help gambling operators identify vulnerable players in a frictionless manner. We talk about the benefits not just to operators, but also to players, and also chat about compliance and the use of AI, among other things. I started out asking James to give a quick overview of what open banking is and how it is helping operators.
So open banking is a global phenomenon. We like to think of it as a movement. It produced the ability for consumers to openly share their financial data, their financial history with businesses for a multitude of purposes, sometimes for credit checks, reference checks. And we see open banking as being ultimately a replacement for the credit reference agencies initiated by the consumer themselves. And then the other dimension of open banking is, of course, the financial payments. So the ability to make a payment to a merchant or an operator directly from the consumer's digital bank account. Of course, that because the consumer is making the payment, it's safer, it's quicker, it's direct between accounts. There's no intermediaries like there are with cards. And this movement is growing across Europe. There's like 8 odd million active users in the UK alone and almost 50 million users of open banking across Europe. A couple of different schemes. So without getting too much into the weeds, UK has faster payments. You all know that came from Voca and Link, the early ATMs in the UK, the early networks that came together to form VocaLink. And then Europe has a scheme called SEPA Instant. So SEPA is a single euro payments area, very similar to UK schemes. Historically, it's taken a couple of days to make a payment, but with the movement towards real-time instant bank payments, that's now the same as the UK, where a payment can be moved between a consumer and a merchant within about 10 seconds. And that's what we see as an average. Of course, it opens up lots of opportunities for operators in the gaming space. It's obviously cheaper, but it's more secure. So there are less chargebacks, there's less fraud because there's no card instrument or data to be lost on the dark web or similar. And it's what's called a push payment. It comes directly from the consumer rather than pulled from their account by virtue of a card number and the kind of intermediaries around it. So we've been working with operators across the UK and Europe as to how to make the gaming sector safer. There are a lot of kind of changes that are happening this year. The UK Gambling Commission, UKGC, as we familiarly know it, is introducing affordability checks for all operators under the UK licensing regime. That initially will be a very soft check. You know, are they in perhaps the right postcode without seeming like they're low income, high risk? Then it will mature into true affordability, and we see open banking being that kind of better solution to cover that for players. And what that really means is the financial data with open banking that could be shared with operators is real time. It's a true reflection of the consumer's account. And the way we're working is not to give that data directly to the operator, but to basically share kind of indicators, markers of harm on the players account to allow them to make a very fast decision. So, you know, gaming, you've got one real, the common type of gambler is probably someone like me who's, you know, follows a lot of sport, puts a fiver on at the weekend, loses it, has a bit of a laugh, and that's okay. And that's the majority of people that have gambling accounts. Now, there is, I think in the UK, just under 3% identified problem gamblers in states. And they're people that will overstretch the money they have as disposable income. They will gamble on games that they're not particularly affiliated with, you know, kind of junior league football in another country, just because the game is on and the odds are there. And that's what we're trying to help operators identify, because it's not good for anyone to have anyone who's a problem gambler. It becomes a financial penalty for the operators to keep somebody in that negative space. And also, you want to be able to identify to the gambler, the consumer themselves, that they have a problem themselves. And that's where all of the kind of GamCare and the charities that sit around this space are operating in really awareness. And that's hopefully where we're going to take this over the coming years, is make both the operators and the players, their traders, aware of problematic or harmful behaviour.
You've touched on there, and you led nicely into my next question, actually. You touched on operators and then talking about benefits to players as well. I don't know whether you just want to elaborate on why a player might choose to deposit with Yasper and what the benefits are for players. Because you talked obviously there about helping operators identify those at risk of harm, but players don't think about that, right? They just, why would they make these choices?
Yeah, so the alternative to kind of going through what would be a very heavy affordability check would be to do what operators have commonly done in the past, and that's ask for bank statements to be uploaded or some other demonstration of financial history, passports, all those kinds of things that kind of demonstrate the customer's financial health. And that's obviously very slow. That's an encumbrance on them to provide. You know, what this gives to consumers is the ability to identify it in real time from the bank. So the journey becomes, James, you'd like to open an account. Let's just do a quick health check on your financial status. Go straight to your bank. You go, yes, I'll share this information with Jasper. We make a decision based on various risk tolerance with the operator. And then that's handed back to them to decide whether that player can either onboard or not, but also the limits that we believe that they're able to kind of gamble within. So that's two things. One is it's the consumer's identity directly from the bank, and secondly, it's their financial health based on their financial history. What is coming in open banking in the UK, and this has been talked about for some time, is kind of deeper personal data, so premium data, as the banks would have called it. And that's really a better proxy for KYC on a player than a passport, because you've got the bank able to say, it's James of One Long Street, London, of 1st of January 2001. I'm not that young, but it enables to make that kind of KYC decision in real time, do PEP and sanctions checks, and then financial health pretty much in near real time, all on one transaction before accepting a deposit. So it kills a lot of birds with one stone, but it's also circumvents the amount of frauds and money laundering and account rental that so often happens in this space. It's quite often that people will identify themselves with a known individual. So they'll get Bob to identify himself as a player, and then Bob will hand his login across to James, and then James will carry on gambling within different limits than he would have got by just setting up an account on that day. So lots of account rental happens. Account verification by the bank stops that, because you wouldn't share your mobile banking data with somebody else. You might share your account, but you're definitely not giving your login to your Barclays account to someone else.
And so that near real-time ecosystem must offer significant benefits when it comes to compliance and security compared to things like e-wallets and regular credit cards. So not just from the player's perspective, where they can cheat the system with Bob versus James or whatever, as you set out, but it must be a much wider benefit to the industry, surely, compared to those other, what now seem like analog options.
I mean, cards have been around for some time, and the world's played a bit of a cat and mouse game over the years. I used to be CTO of Worldpay before I started this, so aware of all the kind of problems that acquirers and kind of PSPs have dealing with cards. There is a lot of fraud. There's a lot of chargeback. You know, there is carding forums out there on the dark web where you can purchase somebody's card information with kind of backing personal information. You just use that, and then you can make several transactions till the bank realizes it's fraudulent, and then the card's blocked. So that doesn't happen with open banking or with PIS, because it's very unlikely your mobile banking app gets stolen from you in the same way that a card can be shared. And the same goes for wallets as well. You know, it's a login and password. They're easy to hack. They get shared all the time. PayPal's playing the same cat and mouse game as everyone else is. So the kind of self-sovereign nature of your own money and your own finance is shared directly from you to the requester, to the operator, is a much safer kind of one-to-one transaction than anything with intermediaries.
Whenever I hear about these kind of, I would say, new technologies, you will accept that probably they've been around a long time and we're seeing some really powerful iterations now. I always want to ask about AI. The people who can harness and use it rather than become beholden to it seems to be the ones that are making the great changes in these sectors. And I wonder if Jasper's using AI, and if so, how? Because that begs the question when you're talking about all these advancements.
I mean, AI is effectively, it's a learning model. So when you look at OpenAI and ChatGPT, it's a language learning model. It sucks up a load of data. It's able to contextualize it, and it's able to respond to a set of parameters that you give it in a structured fashion. It is still not sentient. You know, it's not artificial kind of general intelligence. It doesn't really have the ability to think for itself. However, it is a maturing dimension of what used to be machine learning. And machine learning is really just about having a big data set and looking out for patterns. And that's been prevalent across the credit reference agencies for some time. But it is a fairly blunt instrument. It's fairly black and white. There's not a huge amount of gray in the middle. And if ever you've had a mortgage decline for some strange adverse reason, like you missed a payment on a mobile phone bill 2 years ago, and I had that once in my 20s and I was deeply annoyed about it. Very black and white. There are nuances to everything. And to have some level of artificially intelligent judgment over a set of parameters is a maturing of that machine intelligence, machine learning model. For us, it's about understanding markers of harm. So we've been working with academics in the industry, both who have worked in responsible gaming. They come from a background of reducing harm in players and understanding kind of what that journey is once somebody has to kind of rehabilitate or recontextualize their lives around their habit. But there are some quite specific markers of harm, and a lot of those are payment related. So they come from, when are you making a deposit, which is really obvious. You know, if you're making a deposit at 2 o'clock in the morning and you should be having a job, that's probably a pretty good identifier of you shouldn't be doing that. Nonetheless, you know, people do, you know, casually. But that in itself, combined with velocity of money, combined with timeliness, combined with amount, combined with how your financial health has changed over time. Have you stopped making certain payments? Does it look like your food bill's gone down? Like, there's a lot of things that can contextualize a person. And we're not out there trying to demonize people. We're out there to try and spot kind of early signs of harmful behavior and hopefully protect both parties in that transaction. And it's also difficult to do on a one operator model. So if you're one gaming firm to one player, it's difficult to understand their behavior, because also players, they have multi-accounting type behavior. So, you know, they will have a Betfair account and a 365 and multiple other places. And it's really, really important that you get a pan operator view. And we've been able to, through our technology, we are mapping out the banking sector and how this all interconnects. So we have a good idea of kind of cross-pollination of one player to multiple operators. And that in itself is a better solution than having a kind of single operator view that I think will only be one level of reflection of behavior. So AI helps us bring that all together, contextualize it, and look for early signals to prevent any kind of ongoing harm.
By its very name, open banking suggests a high level of disclosure. And we're talking about people's personal, not only their personal gambling habits, but their personal lifestyle and spending habits as well. It does feel like a high level of disclosure, and people are making it easier for them to disclose more personal information on the face of it. And how do you allay people's inherent skepticism at times about AI and machine learning and the ethical application of it? I mean, there's a balance to be struck here. And so how do you ensure that you can apply AI ethically? I'm not suggesting for a moment you'd act unethically, but to the player, they need confidence, right? They need to be satisfied that they're not at the mercy of the machine.
I think over recent years, so open banking in the UK, from a financial transaction point of view, the kind of account information services dimension, that has been around since 2017. And it really started as the ability to manage your finances better and ultimately kind of shift bank accounts. And there was a degree of aversion then towards it. But I think there's been a level of comfort that's grown in the UK since, particularly when you're boarding to kind of neobanks, or you're looking for a loan, or any of those kind of things that have some element of credit decisioning. People got familiar with what's called consent. It was originally an open banking term, but it became a term under GDPR as well. And consent really means you're giving your consent for a certain type of action to happen and a certain type of processing. And I think that processing has been fairly grey before. If you're giving your bank account data to an operator or a loan or a lender, a loan provider, you've done that anyway. This is kind of just a quicker way of doing that. And you've got some more assurance that that data is being looked at and thrown away rather than kept as a copy of a bank statement somewhere, which is ultimately more exposing. And for us, the way we are working with operators is not to give all of James's financial information straight to an operator. We're looking at it with a set of parameters and those kind of markers of harm. We look at it and then we dispose it. So, you know, we're not looking at holding kind of long tail financial data for consumers. That's not what we do. It isn't a, you know, an intelligence effort on somebody's bank account. It's looking for markers. It's looking for signals that indicate poor behavior. And then when they're doing onboarding with a merchant or operator, it's the basic information that they need to onboard them. So name, address, date of birth is usually the common three. And they have to provide that anyway by virtue of a passport or a driving license. And you know, you think about all the passports and driving licenses you've uploaded over the years to various places, whether you're trading, you're trading FX, equities, CFDs, whatever the flavor of it is, crypto. And then you wonder how all of this data got out onto the dark web somehow, with an accompanying card. That's much more exposing, because that can be used as a real identity document as opposed to data sets that you can throw away after a fraction of time. So we actually see it as a more secure and a more private and a more transparent experience for players than uploading documents.
So the final question, and the question is, how do you see open banking shaping the future of iGaming and the player experience? But I also want to add on that education piece, because as you've explained it to me or to our listeners in the last few minutes, is a very clear, crisp and a strong case for the technology that you're using, but players don't always see that. So I wonder how education is going to shape that future relationship and what players can expect from open banking in the future.
So we see open banking generally across Europe and the movement across the world as a better way to connect identity and money. And that's always been kind of the North Star of Jasper, is by bringing those two things together. And the business actually really started for us at the precipice of the PSD2, the Payment Service Directive 2, GDPR, coming 3D Secure 2, that place where you put your password in after you've made a card transaction. And the culminus of all of that with extended personal data was a bit of a minefield waiting to happen for a lot of people and a lot of kind of data that could be exposed. So I actually see open banking and kind of real-time decisioning and instant payments being a better way to protect the privacy of players, a better way to onboard without having to submit lots and lots of documents. The kind of real-time nature of checks makes it much simpler to casually game or to crypto exchange or anything else that requires much deeper data on you. But I have always seen open banking, the banks, as being kind of one pillar of data. If you think about all the things that happen in your life, you've got an insurer, you've got a bank, you've got a telco provider. Those three have known you for a very long amount of time, and you might have hopped between Sky and BT and back again, but there is a very strong record for your reputation and your history within a financial community, same with your insurers, that is much, much better than a passport or just a copy of something. It connects all the dots and it legitimizes you online and enables you to do that quickly, safely and securely. So that will be one part of iGaming. I imagine crypto exchanges, FX, trading, anywhere where you need to provide a passport and or a driving license to open an account as being a very good place for this to happen. And I also think it will affect credit and lending in the future in a really positive way. We touched on education. I think, you know, the growth in neobanks and the ability for consumers to use their mobile as a kind of almost remote control of their lives is kind of growing trends. It's going to make the world, or certainly the online space, much safer, much kind of cleaner for people to operate with. Within, and I hope that kind of what we're doing, as you noted earlier, is operated in a boundary that is kind of safe, secure and transparent for all of our users, all of our players. And the kind of goal for Jasper is to try and take that into as many places as we can across the world to make payments as instant as possible and financial health as transparent as possible, all within the bounds of privacy and security.